the Chronic Life Podcast, where life is lived well. And now your hosts, Dr. Kevin Payne and Don Peterson.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Kevin Payne with Don Peterson, and we're the Chronic Life Podcast. And today, we're going to talk about one of those things that, if you live with a chronic condition, will become part of your life, whether you like it or not, and that's giving care. Yes, we all like to care for the people we love. Sometimes we all like to be cared for, you know, especially if somebody does it right. There's another layer that comes with living with a chronic condition, because some of this caregiving is necessary, and it's not necessarily the choice that we always want to make. So that dynamic kind of sandwiches itself into your relationships, because the people who are closest to you are the ones who are going to have to bear part of this burden. We're going to talk about that.
So this is a lot like we talked about in the last episode about being tired or fatigued. You know, I think that for a lot of folks, especially if you've been recently diagnosed with a chronic condition, the fatigue or tiredness that you feel is probably, you know, stress-related, some anxiety, things like that. And obviously that vibe kind of where, you know, you give off that vibe, right? And the people right around you, they want to help you. They want to fix it for you. They want to make things better. And, of course, you know, if it's a chronic disease that for which there's no cure, they really can't help, right? So that creates a stress on the part of the caregivers as well. And so I think this is going to be a great episode, and we can dive into the dynamics of those changes that occur to you as the patient and to those around you.
Yeah, exactly. And this is especially important for those of us who are naturally fix-it kind of people. We see a problem, and we want to solve it, and we want to bring it back to quote-unquote normal. We have to have a different set of expectations in here.
And it's a new normal.
Right? It is a new normal.
The normal has to change.
Yes.
And, you know, I guess depending on the severity of your condition, the changes, you know, will vary by degree. But I think in the things that we're going to talk about today, what we'll learn are there's, you know, the right things to do, there's the wrong things to do, there's the right way to look at it, the wrong way to look at it, regardless of how symptomatic you are and or how debilitating your condition might be. But the fact that you have it, that you have to make it part of your life, it's part of your daily routine, and it becomes part of everybody around you and their routines, I think it's an important topic, and we need to understand it.
Yeah. You know, maybe here at the very beginning, it's maybe a good place to start if we talk about caring for the right things in the right ways at the right times. This is going to be, you know, different depending on your individual circumstances.
Yeah.
But there's always some things that we're okay getting help with, and other things that they're much more personal. They're closer to our identity. They're closer to our sense of agency in the world. And so there's a lot of emotion involved with accepting help in those ways.
Well, I think, you know, my personal experience with patients of, you know, different conditions is that depending on the condition, it's something that, you know, like if you had rheumatoid arthritis, or maybe in your case, Kevin, with MS, you know, you might be more willing to share how you feel today, right? Because people can relate to it. But when you have, say, ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease,
right,
you know, that's a very private problem, right? We don't talk about it openly, mm-hmm, you know, at the dinner table or, you know, over breakfast or something like that. And so I got to imagine that depending on the condition that you are facing, that you may deal with it in different ways.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's, there are some of my symptoms that I'm much more open talking about. So, for example, you know, you've seen me talk about, you know, on many occasions how much of my legs I can feel,
yeah,
today. And that varies. And sometimes I don't really have any feeling at all below my knees or my mid-thighs, and other times I do. But then there's other symptoms, and you know, you've experienced this being around me. Sometimes I go through phases where, man, I gotta pee. and there's no way around it. And unfortunately, sometimes it comes in series. So there may be an hour or 2 hour period there where I've got to go four or five times. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I try not to schedule meetings when at times of the day when I think that's going to happen, because I literally just, you know, I've got to go, and I can't sit there and hold it.
Yeah, it's a sense of urgency, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, I think certainly people with Crohn's disease and UC can relate to that, right? Mm-hmm. Because when the body says it's time to go, you got to go.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was, just anecdotally, there was a friend of mine that I met some years ago who had colon cancer. And she had worked on, and maybe we talked about this in one of the episodes, an app that would go on your phone, mm-hmm. like a Yelp for public bathrooms.
Oh,
did I tell you about this?
No, yeah, we hadn't talked about it.
Yeah, her whole thing was getting kind of like, if anybody's ever used Waze, the GPS app. It really is crowdsourced information, right? It's telling uh-huh. you there's an accident here, there's a police car there, or you know, this street's faster than that street. Well, so her app was designed to let people know where the cleanest restrooms were.
Oh,
and they were ranked
brilliant.
Like on Yelp, you know, with stars. And people could vote on, you know, is this a 3-star restroom? Is this a 4-star restroom?
Yeah.
And, you know, if you don't have that condition, right, mm-hmm. if you don't need a bath, you really don't even think about those things, right?
Is her app on the market?
No, it's not. I don't think she ever got to
that point. I will totally sign up for
it. I know, right?
Yeah.
We should have her on sometime, because she's really an incredible woman. She's been through two bouts of colon cancer. Mm-hmm. She's a survivor. She's spent the last, I think, 4 or 5 years running marketing for the Colon Cancer Foundation.
Uh-huh.
But she recently left there, and she's just blogging and doing her own thing and raising her daughter. She's an amazing woman. Maybe we'll have her name is Danielle, and maybe we'll get Danielle on the program with
sometime. Well, I would completely whip out my phone and install that app immediately, because the very first thing that I do when I go into a strange place is scope out where the restrooms are.
Yeah.
So what we're kind of establishing here is that there are some things that are going to be emotionally and practically more or less easy for you to ask with regard to help. And there are also going to be things as the caregiver that you feel like you are more or less prepared to give. And that has to be the beginning of the conversation. And part of this is also, you've got to, as a caregiver, you have to start developing a sense of when is the right time to help.
Yeah, and that comes with a relationship, right?
It does.
I mean, that really is a learning process. There's no one answer to that. It really has to do, kind of like, you know, we keep repeating the same theme about plan A, plan B, plan C. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're caring for somebody and they're having a plan C day, your reaction to them is probably going to be vastly different than it would be if they were on a plan A day, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so you have to be sensitive. You have to listen, watch, and observe, and then determine whether this is a plan A, B, or C day.
Right.
And that should probably determine how you handle situations, right?
It does. And part of that is kind of feeds into an issue that we've talked about before. Is this a support or a solve moment?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, do you need to provide emotional support or just an ear for someone to vent? Or are they actually looking for your functional help? So really it's, you know, support is about emotion and connection, and solve is about functionality. It's about utility. More fights, because I've been through, you know, dealt with lots of clients now, and they're, as couples or family members, they come in, and I'd say good 80% of the time, the fights start with a misunderstanding here.
Right. Yeah. I think I could see that, where, you know, on a given day, you have to adjust, right, what you can do for somebody that they need help with. But on other days, you have to say, look, maybe you want to help yourself. Mm-hmm. Because now you're overcoming or you're conquering your condition, and that's the sense of agency that you want, right?
Exactly.
You don't want everything done for you. You don't want people, you know, helping you all the time. You want to be able to do some things on your own. Mm-hmm. And that's perfectly understandable.
Yeah, exactly. And that sort of is a really nice bridge into the last issue that I kind of want us to touch on here in this section, and that's your agency. When we live with a chronic illness and we have that diminished sense of agency sometimes, this is going to be kind of indelicate for me to say, and I'm just going to say it because it's something that all of us kind of deal with and we don't want to face.
Go for it.
And that is, if somebody is doing something for you and they're helping you out in that way, don't get your knickers in a twist about them doing it the way you would do it. You see what I mean? Because so many times I see a caregiver helping the person that they love, and they don't do it in the way that that person would do it.
Would have done it themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, yeah.
And so as a way of expressing their agency, they start micromanaging and say, oh, no, you need to do it this way and that way and the other. And it's like, no, wait a minute, stop. You've got to emotionally divorce yourself from this and say, look, I'm accepting help. And part of that is I'm accepting the way that they're able and willing to do it.
Yeah. So if my wife tells me to go make chili, I need to go make chili the way I make chili, not the way she would have made chili.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
And I can see that. But I think that's, you know, maybe there's some truth in that for all relationships, regardless of whether or not you're dealing with a chronic condition. I think there's a lesson there for all of us in terms of how we relate to one another.
Yeah, I hope so.
Okay, so we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about, you know, the actions that are involved as we, you know, go through these sort of adjustments to our relationships when these kinds of things occur.
We all have challenges. Mine is multiple sclerosis. We each have this one life, and we didn't choose to be saddled with chronic illness. But there's a better way. So I choose to just jump. And you can too. It's your life. Live it well. ChronicCal.com.
Hello again. I'm still Dr. Kevin Payne with my friend Don Peterson, and we're still Chronic Life Podcast. So we're talking about giving care, and caregiving is an exchange relationship. You're doing things for one another, you're giving and taking, and so in this segment, we want to kind of drill down into what those behaviors look like in a way that's supportive and useful for your relationship. So I'd like to start with a distinction. There was an anthropologist over 100 years ago. His name was Marcel Mauss, and
Mauss. All right, got it.
And he was actually Emile Durkheim's nephew, and who was a famous sociologist. And so Mauss wrote this tiny little book called The Gift. Came out in about first decade of the 20th century. And he made a really important distinction. And he said there are two kinds of human relationships. There are gift-type relationships and exchange-type relationships. And in exchange-type relationships, we explicitly keep track. So, in other words, you go into a grocery store and you interact with the clerk there, and it's all about a finite exchange. You're going to give them some money, and they're going to let you walk out with some groceries and so forth. Our deep personal human relationships that come with us for a long time, our close family members, friends, things like that, those over time move across that continuum and they become more gift-type relationships. So you're not keeping an explicit track.
Right, but it's not just one or the other. Right.
Right?
There's a spectrum here,
Like everything we talk about here, there's always a spectrum, those are the extremes.
Yeah, it's not just a gift relationship, or it's not just an exchange relationship. There's an analog in between.
Right? Exactly. And even in your longest lasting, most intimate relationships, you're still, you've got kind of a rough score that you're keeping in the background there. It's like, I've taken out the trash, 5 weeks in a row here, or whatever it is in your relationship.
But we can relate this to a lot of things more than trash.
Oh, of course we can. Of course we can.
I could go a long distance with this, but I won't.
Well,
prudence dictates that I don't.
And that is wisdom. So what I'm getting at here is a lot of this giving and taking in a relationship becomes more explicit whenever you've got the demands of chronic illness. So a lot of that happens in the background normally, but now these concerns become front and center.
Do you think that, let's say, you know, it's a spouse relationship, mm-hmm. right? It's your husband and your wife. And you've had, and you've evolved to this kind of gift type of relationship. Now things change, like we talked about in the previous segment. What happens? Does it turn, at least initially, into more of an exchange? I'll help you. You give me the opportunity to help you. You have a need. I have something to give you that fills a need. I mean, because a lot of people, I remember I was telling somebody one day that, you know, even charitable giving is often an exchange relationship, even though it seems like it's one way.
Sure.
But if I roll down the window and give the guy at the end of the ramp at the highway a dollar, sure, I'm hope the person does the right thing with the dollar, doesn't go out and buy some crack cocaine with it. But theoretically, I feel good in exchange
yes.
for having done
yep.
something good,
exactly.
right?
Mm-hmm.
As much as it seems like a gift relationship, it's actually an exchange relationship.
Well, what I like to think about this as a renegotiation.
Okay, yeah. Okay,
so
that's a good word.
So you've got kind of this negotiated order that you've had mm-hmm. in your relationship, and the illness comes in, and now you have to renegotiate.
Yeah.
And you just have to realize that a lot of your expectations that you've had need to get thrown out of the window or at least re-examined together. And you need to find that new balance. So it's a renegotiation.
Okay. I think that's a great word. I think it's just a reestablishing or resetting
mm-hmm.
the type of relationship and the meaningful things that exchange between you.
Right.
Right?
And you'll find that some of it is going to be just the same as it was before. But you're going to identify together that there are some things that you are willing to give and that there are some things that the other person is willing to receive.
Yeah, I think that's the question I'm having here is, you know, where's the beginning of that, right? It would seem to me, and I may have this wrong, and I'll let you expand on it, but it would seem to me that if I'm the patient, I'm the person now diagnosed, that it's really on me, in some respects, to establish what I'm willing to do or what I want you to do for me that I will accept willingly and generally always, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there may be exceptions to that, like on a Plan C day, I may need to come prop up your pillows or, you know, or whatever it is you need. But on a general basis, it would seem to me that it's really kind of incumbent on the person who has the condition, whose abilities may have been compromised or changed, to establish what those new, that renegotiated, what does it look like when it's been renegotiated? Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's entirely fair. And
okay.
as the other person in the relationship, as the caregiver, there may be two exceptions to that that you kind of have to be aware of. And the one is, are there things that where the other person has significantly changed in the way they're doing things and they don't seem to recognize? Okay, so you're being the outside observer. You know, like, for example, one of the things that happens with many conditions and with aging also, for example, is that our abilities to drive become compromised. And for many of us, especially us guys, where we've grown up in a culture where our automobiles are an extension of our manhood and our you know, capacity to move through the world, that can be really difficult to admit to yourself that you're not functioning as well behind the wheel.
Yeah. No, machines are, well, they're just masculine.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Tim the Tool Man Taylor.
Exactly. I'm a big fan of grunting. So sometimes as the outside observer, you have to be the one that's willing to broach that difficult conversation because it appears that they don't see it or they're not letting themselves see it. Okay? And that's kind of the, you know, the second issue, that is where sometimes you'll find that the person you're trying to care for is specifically trying to hide their deficiencies.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I believe that people will want you to think, the people around, the people they care about, are the patient's going to want, or the person with the condition is going to want people to think, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. I'm okay. You don't need to worry about me. I got this, right?
Yeah.
And that may not, in fact, probably is unlikely to be true all the time, mm-hmm. right? But you got to fight through that, right? Because as a caregiver, and I know you're not fine. I know, you know, it's like a sexual relationship where, you know, I know you're faking it. it's kind of like, and you're not going to fake it till you make it. It's something that needs to be addressed.
It does.
Right? Because I can't meaningfully help you if you keep telling me you're fine.
Right.
When I know you're not.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. So that's, you know, there's part of this as a caregiver, what are you willing to give and what can you give? So everything that you give, there's a resource cost for you. It takes some of your time. It takes some of your, you know, what can you fit in and still have a high quality of life yourself? Because we know that the act of caregiving is, you know, we get lots of intrinsic benefits out of caring for one another. But there comes a point where it can also feel onerous sometimes.
Oh, yeah. And I think the statistic is that 35% of people over age 18 have somebody in their universe or somebody in their lives that they're caring for mm-hmm. in some way.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a startling statistic. And I'm trying to remember the source of that. And I should identify that before anybody takes that to the bank. But the reality is that many of us are giving care to somebody else that we care for on a regular basis.
Right, and that makes sense because, it's you know, there's several different estimates out there. It's kind of hard to get a really precise population estimate, but most of them are somewhere between 30 and 45% or
yeah.
so. And when you think about the fact that half of us are living with chronic conditions, then it becomes really understandable why so many of us are giving care in some way or another.
Well, and I think on both ends of the spectrum, on both the caregiver and those who need to be cared for, you know, there's a sense of value that we both want to feel,
mm-hmm.
right? I want to feel like I'm doing good for you if you need my help. And you as the patient or the person with the condition want to feel like the person who's helping you is really bringing value.
Right.
Right.
Right. And a really important thing here, because we don't want to build resentment within a relationship. And so that's why it's really important that you think through what are you willing to give and what can you give, and then actually do it. And that goes the other way as well. Because if I'm the person with a condition and I'm being cared for, I don't want it to be a one-way relationship in that direction. You know, I want to be able to give meaningful things to you as well. But that's going to be maybe a different set of things than I could otherwise. As the cared for person, what can I give? And as a caregiver, you really need to think about that. Here's what, you know, I would find meaningful from you. I may have a greatly restricted physical capacity, but maybe I can really listen and really care and really converse with you about those things. And that's important.
Well, I think that the actual things that we do, the behaviors that we display, as I think we'll talk about in the next segment, you know, those are the messages, right? Because you can tell me all day long you're fine. And if I look at you or I watch you walk across the room and I can tell that you're not, then I'm either going to be a little bit resentful that you won't let me in, or I'm going to dismiss it as, well, maybe they don't really want my help.
Right.
And that's probably not the outcome we want. So when we come back from the break, we'll talk about how those actions and your behaviors send those messages. Even if you're not saying the words, your actions speak for you.
We all have challenges. Mine is multiple sclerosis. We each have this one life, and we didn't choose to be saddled with chronic illness. But there's a better way. So I choose to just jump. And you can too. It's your life. Live it well. ChronicCal.com.
Okay, we're back. This is Don Peterson. I'm here with my good friend Kevin Payne, and we're talking about caregiving and how to give care, how to be a good caregiver, a caretaker, I guess, as well. It's funny that how that word works out. A caretaker is like a caregiver, but you know, we're on both ends of those relationships, right? We're either receiving care from someone because we're sick, or we have a debilitating condition. Or we're helping somebody who does. And, you know, getting those relationships right can be complicated, can be scary, can create anxiety. And, you know, if you don't do them well, or at least be aware that they could be better, it can create resentment. I mean, how many, you know, you see marriages and people break up, you know, and I think it's something that everybody who's been, and I've been through this with a number of people when I was at Infusion Express, who were recently diagnosed. Actually, I had our blogger write a blog article for us about, you know, when do you tell people who you're not, you know, like you might tell your mom or dad or your husband or your wife, but when do you tell friends and other people who are meaningful to you and your circle of friends and people you know, when do you tell them? You know, when do you share that with them? And do you share it with them? And how does that change the dynamic? The actions sometimes speak louder than words.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I think Kevin's going to talk a little bit about, you know, how those messages come across and sometimes how they don't.
Every time you do something and every time you don't do something, it's a choice. You may not feel like you've made a choice. You may feel like it's something that you have to do at that point. But it is a decision point of some kind. And everything we do or don't do, or promise to do and then either, you know, come through with or not, sends a message. That message conveys to the other person something about, you know, it may or may not, but the way they take it is that it says something about how important they are to you.
Right, but I think that there's a high likelihood or probability that the observer could read more into something
and
than
that's
there
my
really is?
Yeah, and that's my next point.
Okay.
And because you have to always remember that even though your inclination, you know, you see the world from your perspective. When you promise something and then don't deliver on it, you understand that there are many other concerns and constraints around you, and maybe they just got in the way that time. But the other person, they do two things. One, they don't see all of your environment that you see.
Right.
And the second thing is, each and every one of us is the center of our own universe. And, you know, that's okay. You observe, because we are located observers, and that's where we have to observe the world from. So even though you did something that impacted me, it probably had nothing to do with me. You know, directly, it was, you know, mine was an unintended or collateral consequence. And almost always, we believe everything is about us. And almost never is that true.
Well, we talked about this a couple episodes ago, that book I read by Dr. Ruiz called The Four Agreements. Mm-hmm. And one of the four agreements is never take anything personally, which is probably, of all the things in there, the most difficult to do.
It's extraordinarily difficult.
We pretty much take everything personally, right? Mm-hmm. When do we not? I mean, how do we have a personal relationship with somebody that, you know, is somebody who's dear to you, and when they say something critical, well, how do you not take it personally?
Right? And unless you are a narcissist, then you are more likely to take things more personally as your self-esteem lowers. So if you feel, if you become more sensitive to things.
Yeah, okay.
And so as you feel like you are more at the mercy of the world and you have less agency yourself, then you tend to take these slights more personally.
You know, it's funny. When you said that, it resonated with me. I just had that conversation with my daughter this morning. So she was organizing a cabinet that my wife had been after her to organize where her stuff was for quite some time. And so this morning she was working on it, and I walked up to her and I said, "Oh man, your organizational skills are fantastic when you apply them." and she quickly made a point saying, "You know, you could have just stopped that. Your organizational skills are fantastic, but you had to tag the line." And she said, "I didn't need that last part."
Yeah, but
fair, it's a fair point. I mean,
well, that's true. But you're dad, and you needed to say that.
Yeah, Well, but I've had teachers tell me, "Well, Don, you're a really smart kid if you just apply yourself."
Yeah, exactly. I know. I so many people had so much hope for me at one time.
Well, we still do.
So, you know. Anyway, I just with this segment, I really want us to encourage people to think about the message that their behaviors are sending. Because most of the time, we're just focused on the action. We're just focused on getting things done. We don't take that step back and say, well, what is this communicating? Like, for example, if I'm having a really good day and I don't feel like I need a lot of help, but somebody is really hovering around me trying to give me help that maybe they would give on, say, a C day, then I can find that offensive. You know,
yeah.
because it's something that I want to do. And I'm telling them, wait a minute, I can do this for myself today. But if they don't believe that or they keep trying to help anyway, it's detrimental to the relationship.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like not getting invited to the picnic because I didn't think you could handle the outdoor weather.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Exactly.
No, go ahead and invite me. Mm-hmm. And if I decide it's too hot for me to be out there, I won't come.
Yeah.
Or I'll call you or text you, you know, and say, "Hey, you know what? It's 98 degrees outside. My MS, you know, I can't regulate my body temperature very well. So if you don't mind, I'll take a pass on this one."
Yeah.
But if your friend or me just said, "Let's not invite Kevin because he doesn't handle the heat very well," probably be offended by that, right?
Yeah, I think you've just touched on a topic for a whole nother episode there. And
I keep doing that.
Yeah, you do. Well, we got you around for reasons.
Picnics. That's a great episode.
No, but just this whole idea of the people around you presuming too much. Because your life can become more isolating in lots of ways already. And if your friends and your family and the people who love you around you start preemptively trying to make those decisions, ostensibly to protect you in some way, then from my perspective, it just looks like I'm being excluded out.
Yeah, right. There was an article the other day I saw, I think somebody posted on LinkedIn. I think it was like the 12 things you never say to somebody with a chronic disease.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was, "Well, we didn't invite you because we didn't think you could make it."
Yeah, exactly.
Whoa. You know, and so that anecdote about the picnic came up because of that article. And there were 11 other things that were pretty fantastic about it. And I should go find it and we'll post it on the website so that when you listen to this episode, you can find those things too. Not all of them were poignant, but there were probably four or five of them that were really important and a big part of what we've been talking about today.
Yeah, yeah. And another thing, too, that I want to bring into this idea that we're talking about how actions send messages, and that is the idea of patience.
And patience.
Yeah, with a
not
C-E.
Patient.
Yeah, with a C-E, patience. Patience, grasshopper.
Yeah.
The important thing here is sometimes caregivers get too eager to jump in. And there comes this uncomfortable period where maybe I'm flailing around trying to get something done. Maybe it's one of those days where my fine motor skills are not working well and I'm really struggling trying to open a bottle or something. I'm fidgeting with it and I'm trying and you as a caregiver standing right beside me who care about me and just want to get on with everything might have the inclination to just grab it and open it up and hand it back to me. And doing it that way is functional. It gets it done. But it's also demeaning. And it's kind of humiliating when it's given in
is,
that way.
But how... It, that's not a clear line.
No, it's not. Really, it's not. That's a conversation you
right.
can have.
I think those are the things that, and it's not even, the line's not even in the same place on a given day.
Exactly. Right?
And that's really hard. That's why I said at the outset of the segment is that in some respects, it's kind of incumbent on the individual who has the condition to sort of lay out the ground rules or where that line is today. Because we as caregivers, as we talked about, we either want to support or we want to solve. And it's not the same solving or supporting depending on your day.
Yeah,
right? It can change.
It's a moving target, and that makes it really frustrating and really difficult. And so, you know, the point out of all this is that this is not a one-and-done sort of conversation. This is an ongoing sort of thing. So before you just intercede and do that thing that seems really helpful to you, ask. And because sometimes I'm fumbling with it, and the reason why I'm fumbling with it, you know, you're standing right there. I know I could give it to you, and you would get it done, and it would be very quick. But maybe it's about the message that it's sending to myself.
Sure.
And then there's also times when, as the caregiver standing by, you need to say, okay, just go ahead and I know you're struggling with this today, but go ahead and just let me do it, because it's not just about you. It's about me as well. And
fair enough. Hmm. Well, this segment's been fantastic. I've learned a lot, and I could relate to so many things. There's so many stories I could tell, but we can't go on forever and ever. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to wrap it up and give you some really interesting takeaways from this conversation.
We all have challenges. Mine is multiple sclerosis. We each have this one life, and we didn't choose to be saddled with chronic illness. But there's a better way. So I choose to just jump. And you can too. It's your life. Live it well. ChronicCal.com.
We're back with the Chronic Life Podcast, and we're talking about giving care today. And so far, we've talked about the give and take of caretaking. We've talked about how our actions speak for us in many ways that we really don't anticipate when we're doing what we're doing. And we've talked about how we really have to have conversations and information flow, and we have to be caring for the right things in the right ways and the right times. And we've also talked about how this is a two-way street. And as somebody who sometimes needs care, I want to also be caring for the people who care for me.
The one point I have in this whole segment as we wrap things up is that I think we have to change the labeling. It can't be caregiver and caretaker, because caretaker becomes the same thing as caregiver. So the opposite of caregiving, right, mm-hmm. should be care receiving.
Yeah, it should be. It should be. Right? Well, I like it. Like in Britain, they don't use the term caregiver. They call them carers.
Carers?
Uh-huh. Carers.
Carers. That's mm-hmm. too many errs.
Yeah.
Especially for a dialect that doesn't pronounce R's very well.
No, we're kind of...
I don't know how they get there.
Yeah, we're kind of...
All right, well, never mind. The linguistics part of it doesn't matter, but I do think that there's a labeling matter. You're not a caretaker because you're not really taking. You're there to receive, right? And you need to set the boundaries for what you're receiving.
Yes.
What you're getting from other folks who are willing and love you and want to care for you, you're not taking from them, right? You're receiving it.
Yes.
And maybe that's a better way to look at it.
I think that's an excellent point, because how we frame things matters.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't want to be a taker.
No.
And that's why I worry so much that if I, you know, did have somebody that I cared about that I really had to help take care of, that they would fake it, that they would tell me they're fine when they're not fine. And I wouldn't know what to do or how to help them in the most meaningful way that preserve their agency, preserve mm-hmm. their autonomy and their independence and their self-esteem, while at the same time they could receive the care I want to give them, understanding that it's done out of love and out of real care, that I really want you to be better. I want your quality of life to be better. And I think that's the hard part for caregivers. Yeah. Is that we struggle with where that boundary is. And that's why this episode, I think, is so poignant and meaningful, because I really think we have to set those boundaries And they move. They move
exactly.
from day to day.
And so
this is, to me, this has been enlightening and exhilarating just to talk about it.
Yeah, and we can't emphasize enough the fact that it is a moving target, and this is not a one-time conversation, and it's something that you just have to practice being open about this sort of thing with one another. And it's going to be difficult the first few times.
Yeah.
And it's never always going to be easy. So you're never going to get to a point where it's easy from then on out. So you have to understand that, and you have to recognize that, and you have to realize that as the person giving care, it's not all about everything coming from you. It is perfectly within your rights to say, here's what I need from you in this relationship,
yeah.
and to make it a renegotiation.
Really more a question, how can I best help you today?
Exactly.
How can I best help you with this thing?
Yes.
And maybe it's just support me while I do it myself,
mm-hmm.
or get out of my way so I can go do it myself, or get out of the bathroom so I can have the bathroom to myself, or whatever it is. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And as a caregiver, those are the expressed boundaries and expectations I think that any caregiver would want.
Yeah, I think so. And so these conversations need to start with kind of the facts on the ground, so to speak. It's what are each of you giving and exchanging in the relationship? And sometimes it really helps if you start having that conversation, because I may not even realize or recognize some of the things that you're doing.
Right, right.
And you know, not only that, I might not even realize that some of the things that you're doing are really important for you and maybe onerous for you, because it may be something that I always found easy to do myself. You can't presume that the other person is going to find the same tasks as easy or as hard as you would. Something that's a really big ask for you might not be for me.
Well, it's all relative.
It is all relative.
Yeah.
But we have to understand that, because for me, from my perspective, I may be thinking, oh, this is a really simple thing I'm asking you to do for me. And I don't think of it as a big thing. But for you, it is a big thing.
Yeah.
I have to understand that in your context so that I can regard that appropriately, because it's a really big thing for you to be doing.
I'm beginning to think more that these are universal things.
Yeah, a lot of them are.
I think they're certainly applicable where there's a chronic disease and there's a clear caregiver and a clear care receiver. And I think those negotiated. I mean, you're really charting new waters here, right? For any relationship, but the kind of truths that you're talking about, the kind of boundary establishment, the kind of expectation establishment. I think those would be good in any relationship, at any time, between any two people. Right?
I believe so. And I think, you know, it's important to realize that no matter how sick we are, we're still just people. And the things that were issues as people, just kind of, when you have the added stress and demands of a chronic illness, it kind of throws those things into relief.
Right. But I think that there's an analog here. There's a process. You know, it's not like the day I got diagnosed with Crohn's disease, all of a sudden I had it, right? Mm-hmm. It's something that was built up over a long stretch of time, or maybe even a relatively short period of time. But it's an analog process. It steps up a little bit at a time every day. And then when you get diagnosed, maybe all that really changes is your plan of care, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you change your diet. Maybe you change your exercise patterns. Maybe you're on different pharmacotherapy. You know, some kind of drug that has its own consequences, right, that, you know, you need to understand. And I think this is where the industry, the system, we talk about the healthcare system, this is where the industry could do a better job of helping to educate people when this happens, right? The diagnosis is really only a label,
right,
or a marker of the thing that you've been dealing with for some time. Now we find, oh, it's Crohn's disease. Okay, well, that's great. You know I have a name for this thing that's been bugging me for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
but it doesn't change overnight. And your relationship and the way you handle this and the way you've been handling it, right, has been an evolutionary process, not a series of events or not one big event, right?
Right.
So I think we have to think of it as this is how relationships all go. And as things come into our lives that disrupt those relationships, especially a chronic condition, but other things happen too, mm-hmm. right? Death of a child or somebody you care about. Those are life-altering events. Relationships change.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, it's like, you know, for example, I was most likely I had MS for maybe 11 years before I was diagnosed.
Right.
You know, my then wife, she had 14 years of mystery illness and was technically diagnosed with cancer for about 3 days.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, her officially having cancer from diagnosis to quote unquote cure was between Friday and Monday.
Wow. Yeah.
And then they did the biopsies and said they got all of it and everything. But she had been, you know, from the biopsy, they could determine the tumor had been growing for about 14 years.
Right.
And had
yeah.
been having effects.
And
that's
true of a lot of conditions. When I say these are universal truths and that they apply to relationships all along the way, to me, if you apply these kinds of things to your relationship today, before something like a chronic disease diagnosis disrupts it even further, you'll have a great foundation, a solid foundation for how to deal with these life-altering events.
I think that's exactly right, and that is my hope. I think there are two kinds of questions that I want to throw out here at the very end that I want people to take into their own relationships. You know, whether you are diagnosed and caregiver or just interested people who are listening to this. And the first thing is have a real conversation about the question, are you finding ways to value one another? Because that's really what it's about. You're doing that renegotiation within the relationship to find, okay, we know you've got practical limitations in your life somehow. And you can't do some of the things that maybe you would want to do or you used to do. We're going together to establish new things that we can share between us that demonstrate the value that we have for one another. And that's really what we're doing here. And we don't want anybody to look at that diagnosed caregiver relationship as a one-way thing.
Right.
You know? It's really important that we're still people and we still need to give value to the people we care about as well.
Yeah.
And related to that is, are you sending the messages you think you are? And you just got to ask, because we've talked before about this. We suck at perspective taking. It's got to be perspective getting. You've just got to ask. What, you know, I just did this thing for you, and did you appreciate it? You know, is it something you want me to do again sometime in the future?
Well, it's the common thread that I think has come up in a number of our episodes about advocacy, self-advocacy, and otherwise. It's if you're in need of help and you're not getting what you want or you're not getting what you need, you need to advocate for that.
Exactly.
Openly, expressly, specifically. Not, gee, I wonder when they'll figure out that I'm really feeling bad and have enough compassion to take care of me.
Don't right? expect anyone else to be a mind reader.
Right,
because
exactly.
we suck.
We're not very good at it.
No.
We're very bad at it, which is why body language is so important, right? So the messages, as you say, it's more than just the verbal message. It's all the messages that we send, our body language, the way we shuffle across the floor, the way we stagger up the stairs or whatever it is. All those things are sending messages.
Exactly.
Right? Whether I got dressed before 10 a.m., whether, you know, if I was in my jammies by 4 p.m. and all I wanted to do was have a bowl of mac and cheese and go to bed, that's a message.
Of course.
Right? I'm not doing well for whatever, right? I'm not feeling sociable. I don't want to go out. Mm-hmm. And we all take cues from those messages and we react to them, sometimes inappropriately, sometimes wrongheadedly, sometimes in a frustrated manner. And hopefully most of the time, we understand.
Just like in the last episode, we talked about how as you become more and more fatigued, as you go from awake to tired to fatigued to exhausted, you're sending different messages.
Yeah.
And you've got to look at those signals, not only that you're sending yourself, but that you're sending to other people.
Yeah.
So I hope, you know, in our discussion here, we've provided some motivation for people to have some real, honest, explicit conversations about what both parties are giving and receiving in their relationship. So this has been a first conversation on giving care here with the Chronic Life Podcast.
And I'm going to go find that article. We will post it on the website. Kevin, this has been, to me, an incredibly informative and useful set of information that any relationship would benefit from, and especially when you've had a life-altering diagnosis. So I can't tell you how much I appreciate the work that you've done to help prepare for this particular episode. It's been incredibly meaningful. I hope it's been meaningful to you who are listening. And if there's any more information you want, any deeper dive you'd like us to take, please reach out to us, chroniclifepodcast.com.
This has been the Chronic Life Podcast, where we live life well. Join the conversation on social media at Chronic Life Pod or at chroniclifepodcast.com.